Good morning, all. The first case for argument this morning is Jennings v. The State of Illinois Department of Corrections. Mr. Feiwiger.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Steve Feiwiger. I represent the appellant in this case, Mark Jennings. Mr. Jennings has instituted a national origin discrimination case under Title VII, under which he commenced on December 18, 2003, relating to his termination from his employment as a correctional officer for the state of Illinois with the Illinois Department of Corrections.
Who would think there was such a demand for cigars, just academically?
That's an interesting point, Your Honor. It sure seems to me like...
Snuggling and snuff or something, it might be more sensible, but cigars are pretty obvious. They smell.
Well, I would argue, Your Honor, in this case, the court erred in determining that that was sufficient grounds for the discharge, given the fact that a similarly situated white correctional officer, Greg Hart, in 2001, was found to have been smuggling in whiskey, which we would argue is a much more...
Well, that makes more sense, right off the reel.
Well, Judge Bauer's not a cigar smoker.
I gave up cigars 25 years ago, but the opposite is not.
So did my father. About the same time that the Surgeon General studies were all coming out. Well, anyway, back to my argument. We believe that the court erred in granting summary judgment in this case on the basis that we believe that there's sufficient facts in the record to establish, number one, a direct evidence case of national origin discrimination, and number two, that if the facts aren't sufficient to carry our burden on direct evidence, we believe that there are sufficient facts in the record on the issue of pretext that under the indirect method of analysis in this case, which would preclude summary judgment in this matter, period. Specifically, Mr. Jennings had been a correctional officer for 14 years at this facility, and during the course of his work there, he ran into an immediate supervisor, Steve Wright, who demonstrated a discriminatory amicus towards Hispanic employees in general, and Mark in particular. While Mr. Jennings may have the last name of surname of Jennings, he is actually Hispanic in his race, and once Mr. Wright found out that Mr. Jennings was Hispanic, began to refer to him derogatorily as a lazy Mexican. That statement was made directly by Mr. Wright, according to the affidavits, either in late 2001 or early 2002.
What did Wright have to do with firing him?
Wright referred Mr. Jennings to the Employee Review Board and was the Department of Corrections supervisor who read the charges at the Employee Review Board hearing in late August 2002 and made the recommendation to the Employee Review Board that Mr. Jennings be terminated for his offenses of trading and trafficking and socialization with the inmates. So we believe that that's sufficient evidence in the record to show that he was affecting the decision in this case by being the immediate supervisor who referred my client for the discipline that ultimately resulted. Now, the court, in reviewing the record in this case, found not only that the statements of Mr. Wright, but also the statements of Warden Gary Wyant were demonstrating amicus towards Hispanic Americans in general and towards
Mr. That kind of begs the question. Wasn't he fired at the unruling of an arbitrator?
No, I disagree, Your Honor. He was fired by Mr. Wyant.
Tell me about the arbitrator.
In the process of discipline here at the DOC, an employee first is subject to the investigation. The investigation, which was initiated first by Wright, receiving the report from John Turner.
Well, there's no difficulty with that, is there? I mean, he was smuggling in cigars.
Well, he's maintained his innocence, but ultimately, after the hearing before the arbitrator, after termination, it was the arbitrator found in that he did commit the offenses.
So is that dispute is not before us. So he did smuggle in cigars.
According to the record, yes, we would accept that for purposes of the summary.
Well, that's all we've got to go with is the record. I mean,
correct.
So he did smuggle in cigars, and the arbitrator said he ought to be canned.
But the arbitrator doesn't make the decision to terminate. The arbitrator affirms the decision of the decision maker.
Are we talking about the arbitrator of the grievance, or are you talking about the Employment Review Board?
We're talking about, first, Your Honor, the process of how discipline occurs in DOC. First, you have an investigation. Secondly, management then refers you to an employee review board based on whether they believe that there's sufficient facts present to show a rule violation. Third, the employee review board reviews the facts and then determines whether to recommend a type of discipline or not. The fourth and important step that was lost on the trial court in this case is that the warden is the person who either approves the recommendations of the employee review board.
Yeah, but the arbitrator doesn't come in until after you've been fired and you file a grievance that eventually goes to the arbitrator.
Correct.
Right? All right.
I mean, that's a remedy between the union.
That's the second phase of this whole thing.
Right. And you never get to that phase if Warden Wyant doesn't make the decision to terminate. In the record, the judge found at page 14 of his decision,
Well, doesn't the warden approve the recommendation and the director of CMS make the termination?
Both. But he's a direct participant in the decision, Your Honor. I mean, CMS is just the personnel department of the state. This doesn't get to CMS unless the Warden Wyant says, here's the 30 days pending discharge recommend approval that I've signed off on. Tell me whether or not you're going to agree with my decision or not. So CMS has nothing to review until Warden Wyant makes the decision that I am going to either accept the recommendations of the employee review board or B, which in the record has been shown in previous cases, the warden has reduced discipline that may have been recommended by the employee review board.
But what should we make of the Emmerich report and investigation?
Well, it is what
is he apart from the Jennings Wyatt influence?
Is Emmerich? I would agree she is. I mean, we're not making any factual allegations that Emmerich had any amicus in the course of making her recommendations to the board or to the warden on the report. The warden still has to and did refer Mr. Jennings for this discipline to the employee review board on or about August 14th. In that report that charge signed by both he and Mr. Wright, the referring disciplinary manager, they said that they were basing this decision to refer for discipline not only on the fact of the inmates making the allegations against him, but the fact that there were DOC employees who corroborated that. And there, we've pointed out in the record that at the arbitration, no DOC employee came forward and showed that. The union representatives, in talking with Mr. Wyant after the decision to terminate, stated to him, wait a minute, you just misrepresented that. You're saying the seriousness of this offense is because we've got backup from DOC employees to terminate. There was no factual basis for that statement. And that's where you get into the pretext argument under the indirect method of proof. While you have, in this case, similarly situated Caucasian employees who receive far less discipline for the same or similar types of offenses. First, you have John Krupp. John Krupp is a commissary officer subject to the same rules and regulations as Mr. Jennings. John Krupp was implicated at the same time as Mr. Jennings in this case.
There wasn't any investigation of Krupp, right?
They didn't even interview him.
Well, that's what I just said. They didn't investigate.
But in the initial referral, Your Honor, on February 24th, Warden Wyant noted that Krupp had been also charged with this type of similar conduct. Yet, that's the disparate treatment here that has occurred in this case. The white Caucasian correctional officer who's engaging in the same type of misconduct is given a free pass, whereas the Hispanic employee in this case is fired. And more egregiously, Wyant, the decision maker, who knew that Krupp had been accused of this, doesn't even insist that an interview take place of Krupp in this case.
And the trouble with your case on the warden is that at least I think Judge Mim felt that his anti-Mexican remarks were not made in relation to Jennings specifically, and they were general remarks, and they weren't made at the time of Jennings' being fired. But
well,
that's the problem with your case against the warden.
I think, Your Honor, that the general statements that were made in May of 2002 to Mr. Lynn by Mr. Wyant can be looked at as contemporaneous under the case authority. I mean, specifically, he's saying that he hates Mexicans, that he doesn't like talking to damn beaners, that he doesn't like to speak to them on the phone, that they should be required to take a class in English before they can come over here, and that, more importantly, affirmative action is just a form of reverse discrimination, and what goes around comes around, and we have ways in the South of dealing with those type of people.
Apparently, he was a very talkative warden.
Unfortunately, yes. Or fortunately, from the standpoint of my client in trying to convince this court of the direct evidence and in the alternative indirect proof in this record.
When Emmerich interviewed Crodell, and those charges against Krupp, he interviewed all those inmates. Were there anything to substantiate the charges against Krupp the way they were against Jennings?
Well, Turner substantiated the same person who accused.
They substantiated Turner's allegations against Jennings, but did they substantiate him against Krupp?
No, because they didn't interview Krupp. They left it at Turner, and they said the justification for that is because Turner's the only one making the allegation. But here they're saying, well, in Jennings' case, we have IODC employees who can corroborate this. That was false. There was nothing in the record of Anita Emmerich's report that any DOC employee corroborated any of these inmates' charges at all. Therefore, you have to look at the amicus that Wright and Wyant have previously demonstrated before this investigation takes place in determining whether or not their reasons were sufficient enough to justify the termination here under the tests that have been set forth under the... Davis versus Conway Express case. And other factors under that test and facts that should be considered here is that, the union employees were pretty much shocked by this termination, because this is the only time in the history of this facility that inmates were used as witnesses for the basis of discipline against an employee. First time that a correctional officer was terminated solely on the basis of inmate allegations. There was no objective evidence to show in this investigation that these had actually come from Mr. Jennings. Mr. Jennings denied it. Krupp was accused by the exact same inmate, Turner, of the exact same conduct of it at the exact same time, and yet Wyant and Wright don't even refer him for discipline to the ERB. The document, I mean, again, they say that they had Department of Correction employees who could corroborate this, and it didn't happen. And Wright was the person who referred for discipline and has demonstrated his amicus, and Wyant was the person who also demonstrated his amicus in general to Hispanic employees during the course of the investigation. And therefore, we believe that we've presented sufficient facts both under the direct method of proving direct and indirect. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Mr. Burks?
Good morning. I'm Paul Burks on behalf of the Appalachian Illinois Department of Corrections. I'd like to start with the question that was asked by Judge Flom regarding the Emmerich investigation report. As counsel conceded, there's no allegation that Emmerich was biased in any way against the plaintiff or against Hispanic Americans in any way. And it's really the Emmerich investigation report on which the disciplinary action is based. So that investigation, which is an independent investigation, it has overwhelming evidence of culpability on the part of the plaintiff here, and it really breaks any kind of causation chain between any alleged bias.
Yeah, but the warden is still a decision maker, isn't he? I mean, you can say, well, he had this intervening investigation, but that doesn't change the identity of the person who made the decision.
And the identity of the person who made the decision is the director of Central Management Services. I mean, that's the final decision that discharged the plaintiff.
No, wait a minute. That's you're talking about the grievance that was filed after the firing, right?
No, the grievance wasn't filed until after the Department of Central Management Services approved the discharge. So what happened was there was an investigation and then an employee review board hearing at which a discharge was recommended based on the facts in the investigation, approval by the warden, and that approval was of a 30-day suspension pending discharge. Suspension begins on September 23rd, and then what they're waiting for is the discharge, and that discharge decision is made by the Director of Central Management Services on October 23rd. And in fact, that discharge decision says, on the face of it, it says, you now have the right to grieve under the Collective Bargaining Act, or you could bring it to the Civil Service Commission. This is a final decision. So
you're claiming the discharge was also made by this other agency?
The discharge is made by the Director of Central Management Services, yes. But even moving beyond,
well, I have had the impression that their role was with regard to the grievance, not with regard to the discharge.
No, and in fact, with regard to both. I mean, they are the personnel agency for the state, and actually, the Connolly affidavit, paragraph 9, says I reviewed the recommendation for a discharge of Jennings, and Connolly's an employee of Central Management Services. I looked at the investigation report, I looked at the ERB hearing, and I decided that the evidence was sufficient to approve the discharge. But even moving to assuming for purposes of argument, which is not something that the state concedes, that Wyant could be considered a decision maker here, there's really the causation question, the nexus between those statements, and I think this is a question that you asked earlier, Judge Cudahy, was where's the nexus between where Warden Wyant's sitting in his office in May 2001 discussing absenteeism with another employee And a phone call comes in, and he makes these derogatory comments about the ability of Mexicans or Mexican-Americans to speak English. They're not talking about Jennings. They're not discussing the investigation of Jennings or discipline of Jennings. I mean, these are really the quintessential stray comments. And if these could be used here to create a question of fact for a jury as to the reason behind this discharge, they could really be used for any Mexican-American or Hispanic employee employed by this particular facility, because they're general comments that aren't linked to any particular discharge decision. So I think,
well, beyond that, of course, there's this reference to the Paz case and the so-called mosaic of surrounding circumstances. There are some other things that seem to me to implicate Wyant. One of them is his statement that, you know, even if they recommended that Jennings be rehired, he'd veto it under any circumstances. That's one of them. He also said one of your arguments is that all the white people that were accused of the same thing were fired. But they weren't fired by Wyant. They were fired by his assistant. We don't know if Wyant would have fired him or not, I guess. And finally,
I could address.
He failed to investigate the case of Krupp, which was brought up in the other argument. Those are other things that suggest that Wyant had some pretty strong opinions about this case.
Well, I could deal with. Let me address those each in turn. One, the hypothetical veto, I guess we'll call it, is the testimony in the affidavit from one of the union representatives is we talked to Wyant about whether or not Jennings would get a last chance agreement, and he said that he wouldn't offer one or he wouldn't approve one. But the testimony of the individuals who are actually responsible. Now, keeping in mind that once Jennings filed his grievance, the parties to the grievance are the union and the Department of Central Management Services. Jennings is not a party. The Department of Corrections isn't a party. And the Department of Central Management Services, it's undisputed, makes the decision as to whether or not to settle.
Well, sure, they make the decision, but, I mean, this is an indication of his attitude.
It's an indication of his attitude. It may be an indication of his attitude, but he can't be liable for his attitude. He has to be liable for his actions. And in this case, it's really undisputed that CMS never recommended.
Well, I mean, he can't be liable for him, but we're trying to determine whether his decision is influenced by his attitude toward Mexicans. And this seems to be part of the so-called mosaic with regard to that.
I don't think that piece can really form part of the mosaic because it's undisputed that nobody ever recommended to Ward and Wyant that Mr. Jennings be offered a last chance agreement or that his grievance be settled. Nobody ever suggested it. They went forward because they thought they could win, and they did win. So what he might have done had that suggestion been made, I don't think can really be part of the mosaic. And similarly, the idea that the white employees were offered these last chance agreements, but Jennings was not, is really can't be part of the mosaic either, because these last chance agreements come really after the discharge decision's already been made and the grievance has been filed. So if looking at Ricks and at Lever, when you're dealing with Ricks is a Supreme Court case and Lever a case from the Seventh Circuit saying, look, somebody who files a grievance is not involved in an employment decision anymore. Whatever the motives behind denying the grievance or settling the grievance, it's not part of the employment decision. It's part of the collateral review of the employment decision, much like this case would be part of the collateral review of the employment decision. And our decision not to settle this discrimination case or the failure to settle this discrimination case with Mr. Jennings couldn't be part of a mosaic of discrimination on the part of the department, even if previous cases had been settled, previous Title VII cases had been settled. And with respect to Mr. Krupp, I think the district court was really right on point on this. The investigation was into how did these black and mild cigars, how did this contraband get into the prison? An inmate said Jennings brought them in. This was corroborated by many other inmates. It was corroborated by the duty rosters. It was, in fact, some of the facts that the inmates made were corroborated by employees, in that an employee of the department was interviewed and said, after lights out, inmate Turner made requests to go up and visit with Officer Jennings. I called Officer Jennings. He said, send him up. Now, we don't know what happened in those meetings, but it does corroborate the allegations against Officer Jennings. Turning to Krupp, all of these inmates who were interviewed, all of the records that were reviewed, they did not substantiate the charge against Krupp, the commissary officer. So, you know, just
no,
simply based on the evidence.
They didn't investigate Krupp. That's the point.
Well, it was part of one investigation. I mean, Krupp was also accused of participating in the smuggling of these black and mild cigars. So the investigation into how did these get in.
We're talking about summary judgment here, so, you know, I mean, we can't have all these loose ends hanging around and grant summary judgment, I don't think.
Agreed, but a mosaic is bits of information that corroborate each other, that come together as a whole, that look like discrimination. And in looking at the mosaic, you also have to look at the other evidence that's part of the mosaic. And the overwhelming evidence indicates that the department had good cause to fire this employee. Several independent people reviewed that evidence. All of them came to the same conclusion. And those independent investigations sort of they break that chain of causation between these remote remarks and the ultimate employment decision. I mean, turning to Mr. Jennings' second claim of discrimination, which is the failure to settle his grievance as other grievances had been settled, I would really rely on the reasoning of this court's decision in Lever to say once he was discharged on October 23rd, when that final decision came from CMS, that really terminated his employment and his attempt to get that job back through either a grievance or through a Title VII action or through a Civil Service Commission action. None of those are really relevant. None of those constitute adverse employment actions. And so the failure to settle a grievance just simply doesn't state a claim. It's not an adverse employment action, and it can't form the basis of liability here.
Sir, can I just take you back for a second? Perhaps we can tie it down a little bit more following up on Judge Cuddy's inquiry about Krupp. And is it your position that the record will reflect that in the Emmerich investigation of Jennings, and they talked to these six other inmates, that inquiry was made and no evidence adduced that Krupp was trading?
That's correct.
So, all right. So it's that you say sets them apart as far as being similarly situated.
That is correct.
Even though there's not a specific investigation of Krupp, it's subsumed, in your judgment, in the investigation of Jennings.
In my judgment, that is what happened. There was a single investigation into the contraband in which multiple names came up, but only one individual, the charges against one individual were substantiated.
Is it also the state's position, then, that apart from any motives of the warden in his reference, that because there's an independent investigation, that breaks any. It may have been set afire, this blaze, but it's whether or not it amounts to anything is dependent on an independent investigation.
So we don't
as despicable as these comments may be. We don't look at that at all because of the independent investigation?
That's correct. I believe you'd have to link the comments to the outcome. And when you have an independent investigation by a non-biased investigator and then a review hearing at which the employee was represented by a union, you have sort of the basis for the decision that is completely independent of any bias. It's based on the facts in the investigation.
There should be, in your mind, then, if the investigation is established as independent, whether you've got a biased recommender or a non-biased recommender, it does not matter.
That's correct. And I think the cases Raskowiak and Willis in particular, and there are others, I believe, as well, would support that. Because in Willis, you have supervisors. This was a trial in Willis where the jury found for the plaintiff. And reviewing the jury determination, the court said, look, the jury could have believed that these supervisors planted evidence against the plaintiff based on her race, because they were, and so they initiated the alleged wrongful conduct, which led to the discharge. But then they said, the court said, but there's still not enough evidence to find for the plaintiff here, because we have an independent investigation by a final decision maker who, you know, reviewed the documents on her own and didn't rely on any alleged bias, relied on objective violations of policy. So I think Willis is really on point for that particular proposition. Ruskowiak is similar, where you have alleged bias recommender, someone who submits a report to the decision maker saying discharge this person, or this person should be discharged, but the actual decision maker, but that report's not false in any way, it's not inaccurate, and when the decision maker makes the decision, it's based on accurate information, objective information. I do believe that the independent investigation, the independent ERB hearing, and the CMS, the final decision by CMS, all by independent people, based on objective facts, would break the causation between any.
CMS, because the warden does pass on the recommendation post the independent investigation, Mr. Burks, right?
Correct.
And he did that. Could the CMS have the ability to reject? I mean, is it a rubber stamp or is it not? I guess I'm trying to inquire how, if you know how ministerial that is. Is there a judgment by CMS made that's independent of the recommendation?
There is an independent judgment by CMS. That's in this case, that's supported by the affidavit of Denise Conley at paragraph 9, where she explains what she did in reviewing the recommendation for discharge. It's also substantiated by the Administrative Code, the Illinois Administrative Personnel Code, which unfortunately I did not cite in my brief, but I would be happy to submit supplementary materials on that if you would like. I see my time is up. If there are no further questions, thank you.
Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.